Hello and welcome back to another great episode of Why We Play. This is Brennan coming with another great interview. It's actually the other side of the Omniclab podcast. I'm super excited to have him on. My guest today is Rob May. Rob, how are you doing today?
What's up? Greetings from Nihon, aka the land of the rising sun, Japan. What's up?
So that I just want to get out of the gate, like, and I told Anders it's the same thing, honestly. Like, you guys are like one of my favorite podcasts I listen to on a daily basis, or a weekly basis, I guess.
That's great. Well, thanks.
It makes me want to kick back and play Overwatch while I'm sitting at work, just grinding through, you know, normal workday stuff. So
right on. I enjoy making it, so I'm not surprised that people listen to our show, because like the whole goal of making it was for community. But it never ceases to amaze me just how many people really enjoy it. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, completely.
So it's kind of just like blow your mind off the doors. You're just like, what is really that many people listen? And then that's even more amazing is that the community keeps going and people are like, responsive to that. You know, that's like the next step in a content creator, not necessarily career, because it's still a hobby and it probably will forever still be a hobby, even if I make it. It's like gonna look that way, but you know, as a content creator, you wanna make stuff and it's cool and you want people to listen. But the next step is even more gratifying, is when people not just respond to the stimulus, but they actually like reach out and they're like, hey, I love this, can I be a part of it? And even if you have to say no, you're like, wow, that actually took them like 4 or 5 steps to get all the way through the channels to get back with me to say, hey, I want to be a part of what you're doing because it's cool. Even if they're like people that you don't even want to deal with, it's still really neat.
No, and you guys have like, I told Anders this too, your community is like really, the only word I can come up with is awesome, because not only are they engaged with like what's going on in the show, but they're engaged with each other as well. And there's not like, it's not an overwhelming cesspool of negativity. So, I mean, you guys fostered something really, really, really cool, especially in the Discord. So,
yeah, the Discord is definitely the best part about producing the show. We're closing in on around 1,500 people in the Discord, and I believe we're somewhere close to, I'm pulling up in the numbers right now. Let's see. So basically, our weekly users are about 2/3 of 1,500. So we have about a 66% engagement on a weekly basis. Somebody's posting in Discord. So it's pretty crazy, like, to see that many people just completely just full tilt into a community like that. And we have a lot of people that are like moderating and adminning for when Andres and I can't be on. But most of it's kind of community run, like, some of our top people that comment the most are just people that love playing the game and just talking with others. And we're just like, hey, if you guys like it that much, why don't you just help us manage it? And they're all on their own. We even have people that are helping us manage that are patrons of the show. So they're like paying for the show and then like helping it run. And they get a lot of gratification out of it. So
you guys have all
the more reason to keep involved.
You have an awesome ride or die community. So yeah, I mean, once again, kudos to that. So Rob, what have you been playing recently, game wise?
Recently, okay. So the top three things I've been playing, well, I guess top four if you include Diablo. I've been playing Diablo 3. It's one of the first games that I've been able to pick up on PC besides World of Warcraft that I can play with my wife. But it's the first game that I can play with my wife on PC together that doesn't cause her to have motion sickness, which is a big thing that happened when we started playing WoW. She really loved questing. She kind of started getting into like the grouping and the dungeon raiding and all that. But at the end of the day, we couldn't play for very long because the motion sickness just started getting to her. So that was a really big boon to finally something that we can play together, because she's not a huge gamer. She loves playing games, but she's very particular in her tastes. So that's the first thing. And then the other one that I just finished beating, but I'm going back to finish some shrines and finish up the memories. You're probably getting this is Breath of the Wild for the Switch. So
you got a Switch.
I'm playing that. Yes, I got really lucky. Talked with my supervisor, and we got into ordering or pre-ordering the second shipment at a electronics store here in Japan near me. So I was able to go pick it up.
That's awesome.
But we got that, and then I've been playing Hearthstone a little bit. This is like the first month in a long time I hit rank 10. Do another podcast for that called Velen's Chosen, and dang, we got some really cool new cards coming for the next set in about 6 days from right now when we're recording. So I'm going to be full tilt playing dinosaurs and elementals and playing quests. It's going to be really exciting. And then obviously Overwatch. I've been playing that. I hit platinum for the first time last season and then placed in platinum this season, and I just got in the middle of 2800 before diving down to 2600 or 2700 again.
Oh no. So I'm doing the dance.
Yeah, it's all good. I'm doing the dance, the Elo yo-yo, as they call it in some senses, but I'd like to hit diamond this season, but I'm not going to be like full tilt into it like I was prior. I feel like I got really burned out doing it, and I can still be strategic and still enjoy the game, but dang, it's fun playing Mercy in this new meta, let me tell you.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. I'm not a Mercy main at all. Like, I feel like I'm trash with her, even though everybody says I'm, you know, not terrible. Mostly, I'm a Zenyatta main through Zenyatta and Roadhog.
Dude, Zenny is good right now.
Yeah, he is.
Zenny's real good.
I'm digging
him. I played him a lot in the game night.
I'm digging him real good right now, so... And I seem to be winning. I've actually gone on a pretty decent tear recently. So hopefully I can keep that up this weekend. But I've been playing.
I can't wait to do it going deep on him. He's crazy.
Oh, he's so much fun. But yeah, I've had to take a step back.
You've been playing Mass Effect though.
Oh, Mass Effect. It's a game of
Is this Andromeda?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. I if you enjoy Mass Effect, I feel like that you can enjoy what Andromeda has to offer. It has jank. I'm not gonna lie. There's a lot of issues. But
okay.
I hate saying this about a game, but get past like the first 5-10 hours, and it really like it starts getting going and starts getting good. So. But yeah,
there's always games like that. When you have games that are like over 100 hours worthy, you kind of have to get past that first wall.
Yeah, like Persona 5 is going to be the same way. I'm hopping into that next week when it comes out. So,
okay,
I'm really excited for that. So,
what was that new game that's coming out this year that I'm super pumped for? Oh, Ukulele. Oh my word!
Oh,
I
yeah.
heard that sucker was coming out and saw that they had announced the date. And then as soon as they announced the date for Ukulele, I went on my computer, downloaded emulators, and blasted through Banjo-Kazooie in 2 weeks. It was fantastic. So I'm really, really, really pumped for that game. And I found out it's going to be coming to the Switch, so I just like almost flipped out
my apartment inside out. I'm picking that up on the Switch for sure because, I mean, it just makes sense. Once I get mine, I haven't yet scored
a platformer,
one.
Man. You got to.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I more or less did the same thing. I kind of used my 4-year-old daughter as an excuse, and made her play Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie and Nuts and Bolts.
Yeah, I still haven't finished Banjo-Tooie yet. I don't know. I want to go do it, but I kind of don't because I know the game's like twice as long and not as good, you know?
Yeah, it's not nearly as tight as Kazooie was, but it's still enjoyable and she had a good time with it, so.
Yeah.
Right now, she's actually playing Majora's Mask on the Wii U, so.
Wow. Yeah. That is challenging with the Wii U controls, I might add.
Yeah, it is.
I love it for the DS, though. I played the remake, and I still have it, and oh, man. That last fight, so good.
That's still in my, like, top pantheon, top three of Zelda games, so. I think Breath of the Wild took the top spot.
I'm a big Wind Waker fan, actually. Wind Waker is one of my favorite games, and that's why I love Breath of the Wild so much, to kind of cut you loose more.
So what do you enjoy about Breath of the Wild? I haven't been able to really talk to somebody about it yet.
Okay, well, if I have to say, it's kind of like really strange. You know, a lot of people like don't like Breath of the Wild because they're like, I have to spend hours and hours and hours of grinding and doing this and doing that, and like gaining this and upgrading my armor here, and the puzzles aren't as challenging and the story's not as linear, and I'm just like, they basically made this like Far Cry 4 or Far Cry 3 or whatever it was, and they mixed it with like a Zelda game. And this is like OG Zelda game, not like, you know, the things you came to know and love in N64. This is calling back to like NES days, and they basically put that in a modern scope, and then they added a third dimension and a stamina bar. And so they kind of did a little bit with Skyward Sword, but I feel like Skyward Sword kind of fell flat on its face with the traditional linear storyline that happens within every Zelda game, yeah, for the most part. But this one has not just some intense replayability and speedrunning potential, but the completionist in every Zelda player is going haywire in this one. Like 120 shrines, 600 Korok seed locations. You've got any different way of building Zelda. You can go for a lot of stamina, low hearts, go full hard mode, play the whole game with three hearts if you want, up until a max of, I think it's six, or I'm sorry, no. I think the max or the minimum heart count that you can go with is like seven, because you start with three and then you got the four bosses and you get one on each boss.
And that's even if you go and do the bosses. I mean, you can just go and try to fight Ganon.
You can just go straight in to beat the snot out of Ganon with like no armor, full hard mode, but I don't think you're going to be able to do it. You have to have a decent bow, and I don't know. Like, I would like to see if there's a ability to like turn it off and do the final fight, because I did the whole thing. I completed about, let's see, there's 120 shrines. So I completed 65, 70 shrines before going in.
Shoot.
All the bosses. And I have like almost all of my armor sets up to rank 3. So I did a lot of grinding for fun because I enjoy that. But
it's a great
game. I was very disappointed in the final fight, honestly.
Oh, don't spoil. I'm not there yet.
I'm not going to spoil it beyond that, but I'm just going to say don't expect much. Just keep enjoying the game for the game itself. But final boss, very, very disappointing.
No, I think I've been playing for about 50 hours. I think I have probably that same amount of shrines, and I think I've only done one divine beast, just because like I just enjoy climbing up to the top of the mountain and
exactly
just looking around and then floating away doing whatever.
You asked me what my favorite part of the game was, right?
Yeah,
I think my favorite part of the game was twofold: getting lost and fighting Lynels. That is my favorite thing in all of Breath of the Wild. Fighting the Lynels is one of the coolest things. They're the most gratifying things to kill, and I feel like they require the most skill. And I learned so many interesting things having to fight them multiple times, and even trying to fight them with really bad weapons a lot of the time was really interesting.
Yeah.
But quick tip I have for you, if you want to fight a Lynel and beat them a little bit more, is try to get a little bit of verticality or get close to a place where you can jump and then use your glider like for more than 2 seconds, and then whip out your bow. Because you can get about, if you have a long stamina bar, you can get the trigger on the slow-mo and you can fire about 2 rounds before your stamina runs out to the face of the Lynel, and it will bring him to his knees and you can bum rush him with your sword right after.
All
right,
so perfect.
pretty fun stuff for you to go run around with Lynels, but they're awesome and they're very, very cool. Great design.
I'm definitely going to try that now that I got that hot tip from you.
It's great. It's even good for engaging.
No, for sure. So. Engaging anything, really, you know. But yeah, for sure.
Really fun to jump up from like 10 stories down and just pop somebody in slow-mo.
It's so great.
Oh, man.
Like, that game. And the game doesn't really ever tell you no. Like, if you try to do something, anything really, the rules of the game are super, like, limited. There's not much you can't do. And if you think something's going to work, chances are it probably will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
I really enjoy the game.
Oh, Zelda. It's so good. So, So Rob, we've talked about what we're playing now, right? So let's dive back into the past a little bit. How did you start playing games? What got you into this hobby?
Oh, that's a loaded question. So I started playing, I think my first game system was a Super Nintendo, but I had played NES over at a I got babysat at a different house and I met a friend. It was kind of weird. Both my parents were working, so it was very interesting. I want to say somewhere around age four or five is when I started playing. I remember playing because the first game I played was ironically a Zelda game. And it was also the next game that I played was another game that was kind of weird. It's called Ants. It was very boring, but it was really interesting. You basically were trying to set up a ant farm and you had to avoid like spiders and lizards and stuff and kind of build it up. It was more like a SimCity for ants. It was kind of weird, but interesting at the same time.
I feel like I've heard of that before.
There's like my first games.
I mean, if there's two you're going to come in on, Zelda's at least one of them. Ants, I mean, you know.
Yep. So I started out with a Super Nintendo. I played a lot of... it's kind of like Street Fighter. It's the Ninja Turtles 2 fighting game. I played that a lot. And, you know, you would think that that would lead me into playing more fighting games, but I ended up playing a lot more platformers. After that, I got a couple other games for my Super Nintendo. Just didn't really play it, honestly, as much. I feel like my parents were gating me on playing it because of how much time I would jump into it. So they forced me to go play outside and be social. So after that, I ended up picking up a Game Boy Color, played the snot out of Pokemon, went full tilt Pokemon all the way through up until Sapphire Ruby, and then kind of broke off from playing it, but still picked up the game every once in a while and played the next gen and then dropped. And I even picked up Sun and Moon and stuff and picked those and just full tilt into those for a while and Omega Ruby and all that. But so I'm a full Pokemon fan, even if I'm not great at it, I enjoy it. I play a lot of RPGs, ironically, which is something that I don't really talk about a whole lot, but I probably put the most hours of any one game besides World of Warcraft on Final Fantasy Tactics, Final Fantasy Tactics Advanced, and Final Fantasy Tactics A2, which is the DS version, and Fire Emblem for the Game Boy Advanced. Those are probably the games I put the most hours on. So that probably is why I have a strategic mind for Overwatch and for Hearthstone. Then I played a lot of the trading card games for Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! I had a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament every week on Saturdays when I was in upper elementary to junior high. And when the tournament was on medium to low size weeks, I would almost always win. So it was local, makes you feel awesome as a kid, but I would pretty much get top three every week. It was really, really fun. I played a really fast mid-range deck for those of you trying to remember. I'm talking like... you only have like two or three monsters that are, you know, five or six stars. They have a lot of high attack, single cost minions with lots of board flips. And it was really, really fun to play. And I kind of adopted that into my Hearthstone game style. I really enjoy playing Zoo Warlock and mid-range Shaman, but Control Shaman is still my jam. If you listen to the podcast, you'll find that out very quickly. I love my Control Shaman cards. Even though I don't play as much as I used to, I feel like the new set, like we were talking in the pre-show, Brandon, was my jam. And then in Overwatch, or I played a lot of League of Legends as well. I got competitive on console, Xbox, original, Halo 2. I played that a lot. Like,
oh man,
I was in the top rankings for Team Slayer for the longest time, right before Team Snipers became a thing. And then I played way too many custom games, got burned out. So...
Halo 2 was fantastic in multiplayer. I mean, I dumped hundreds and hundreds of hours into that just every night. Even if my parents were like, no, you can't play games, I'd just like sneak back downstairs just to get in a couple games of Halo 2.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, sorry, detour, go on.
No. I think that's pretty much it. Like, I play a lot of stuff. I'm a huge BioShock fan. Absolutely massive. Like BioShock Original and BioShock Infinite, love those games. But
you left out BioShock 2.
I hate BioShock 2. I played it just because I needed to get the badge. I couldn't.
So
I will say this, there's a lot of mechanics in BioShock 2 that were excellent. But yeah, not so much the story. I just couldn't get into it. feel like if I can replay, if I'd rather replay one or play two, I'd replay one, you know?
I find that there are two camps when it comes to Bioshock 2. Either you loved the game or you absolutely despise, or you just, it bounced off of you completely. There's like no middle ground of anybody saying, meh, it was okay.
So Brendan, I have to ask you something. What is like your favorite like niche game? Kind of like the game that's flown under the radar that not a lot of people played, or maybe not a lot of people like to talk about necessarily, but it was like, that game was dope.
Persona 4 Golden. I mean, hands down.
Persona 4 Golden. Okay.
Yes. I mean,
interesting.
And if you listen to, you know, people who talk about games a lot more, Persona generally kind of comes up every once in a while. But even still, it doesn't feel like anybody's really like, it doesn't feel like people have touched it very much. I'm a huge JRPG fan. I always have been since you know, the early days of Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest and Chrono Trigger and games like that. So
Oh man.
I can dump hours and hours and hours.
My buddy loved Golden Sun and Chrono Trigger. But I have to say my favorite game, I didn't even beat it, so don't hurt me, but this is one of my favorite games. Is called Thief Deadly Shadows, original Xbox title.
Oh, Thief was so great.
That game was way before its time, man. Like, this thing had, like, this was like a better than kind of the Assassin's Creed mechanics before Assassin's Creed existed. And then they paired that with the era of it, add a little bit of fantasy, and then everything to do with Splinter Cell and how you maneuver the game. Like, very, very cool stuff. Like, there's water arrows in the game. If you guys have never played this, there's water arrows to, like, put torches out. It's set up in, like, medieval times. There's three factions. There's, like, a lightning hammer cult. And then there's, like, these lizard people cult as well. There's a little bit of magic here and there. You even have these things called moss arrows that you would fire on the ground in order to reduce the loudness of your steps. It had sound mechanics. It had lighting mechanics to see how visible you were or how visible things were around you if you were trying to move bodies. You had a blackjack to knock people out and a dagger to kill them. You also could use water arrows on the blood to remove it. Like, there's so many great mechanics in this game that were beyond its time. Like, this is OG Xbox stuff, guys. So cool.
No, I haven't heard anybody talk about Thief in probably like, what, 15 years at this point. It feels like.
Yeah. That game is, oh.
Yeah, stealth games, I will literally play any like stealth mechanic based game that comes out, including like up to Dishonored and even the new
Dishonored Thief game. Dishonored's very
cool. The new Thief game, it wasn't even very good. I still picked it up and played it from front to back and, you know,
I've heard nothing but mixed reviews for that, sadly, but it's supposed to be a modern version of that with kind of a more lame story. And honestly, like, a game being before its time is very different from a game being behind its time. So if you kind of like update the graphics and reprint it, it's kind of lame. But if you consider like the original, like we were talking about, and you play this, you're like, wow, this was like that old. That's good. Yep. That's a good title.
For sure. So, for sure. I remember reading the pre-release coverage for it too, and I was like, wait, what? Like this doesn't seem even like
it got rave reviews.
It doesn't even feel like it's gonna live up to what the pre-release like, you know, footage was. I'm just like, huh.
Oh yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm gonna pick this up just to see this mess, because I thought it was gonna be a complete travesty mess with everything that they were spouting about it.
Yeah.
It's
the typical like overhype game, right?
I have that habit of buying games that like it feels like I'm punishing myself playing them, but I just have to see how bad they are. Like,
oh yeah,
my latest one was Homefront: The Revolution. Oh my god.
Was that the like the older title? Because I think I still have a copy of that, and I didn't get a chance to finish it. And on paper, and the story like originally gripped me a lot, but the more I played it, the more I was like, this is kind of the same thing every 10 minutes.
No, it was the one that came out probably a year ago for, you know, modern consoles and PC.
Okay.
It, nobody.
I played Homefront Original, maybe.
Yeah, and there was like, good things in there. It wasn't a great game. It wasn't even really a good game, but there were good ideas in there that they could have expounded upon. And the second Homefront went through developer hell. It took 10 years to come out. It switched hands about 4 different times. And you can tell
Then that's just doomed at that point.
it shows, right? But then there are games like Doom that took 10 years and 3 reboots to come out, and that game was fantastic. Did you play the new Doom? Yeah, but the
difference between that and Doom is, like, Doom, when Doom changes hands, people scrap everything and start blank slate, you know? That's definitely happening behind closed doors, and that's attributed to people that are caring for the franchise when they do change hands or when they do hit a developer thing. They might, like, include gameplay mechanics or guns or certain elements, but they are scrapping the whole system from the bottom up and reprogramming everything, you know? Yeah. Like, they're building the system.
Yeah. That new Doom, though, I still like kick it on every once in a while just to play that like introduction. It looks 40 beautiful. Minutes. Oh, that game.
Yeah. I'm not a big Doom guy, but I do respect that title and what it represents as a whole for the shooting community. Like, I very much expect Doom to continue to do great things.
No,
it's just never been something that I've had in my pocketbook.
Yeah.
For games that I've played.
Especially the new Doom's most people say it's great, but I've talked to a lot of people that find it polarizing because it's really fast, it's really gritty, and it just plays this weird synth metal soundtrack as you're punching demons and ripping their jaws in half. And some people just can't get into that. But
absolutely.
That on launch night, I think I stayed up for 12 hours just playing it straight through because that game was just fantastic.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I stayed up very, very late in the evening and did the, what's the title? Halo 3 release, and played that 2 hours, and that was a school night release.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in high school. And I bought my own Xbox 360 with my own money, and it was a pre-ordered Xbox 360 Halo theme with a Halo controller, and then I bought the Halo game. I was full into it. And then not even 12 months later, I end up buying World of Warcraft Vanilla WoW about 3 to 4, maybe it was 2 months before, 3 months before Burning Crusade released. And then I became a PC gamer. Yep, so that's the story of the switch from the consoles.
Yep. And then there's that. I did the same thing more or less. I mean, I don't play anymore. I played for probably about a good 5-6 years of WoW.
Okay, what did you play? What did you play? We have to do the obligatory questions faction, top 3 characters, what do you like raiding with? Do you like PvP? What realm? Horde. Horde or Alliance? Good man.
I was Horde.
Good man.
You know, the actual way to do it. And mostly I played Prot Warrior. I think I had 3 different Prot Warriors.
Prot Warrior. Represent. Dang, son, you're the real deal.
I don't know where they sit at anymore in viability, but I mean, even when they were trash.
They have 2 specs within Prot now.
What?
They have Guardian Warrior or something stupid, silly. It's kind of or Gladiator Warrior or something like that. You can run. It's basically the build you can run for damage Prot or off tank spec. And you can also run it in PvP. You have PvP Prot Warriors basically called Gladiator. It's pretty crazy.
Okay.
It's basically if you want to run a sword and a shield in PvP, it's pretty cool.
When did that?
All right, did you play? So you didn't play PvP server, did you?
No, I didn't. I played PvE.
Okay.
I did mostly raiding.
Yeah, me too.
No, that was my jam. PvP. I mean, I respect it. I can't. I'm not good at it, and so if I'm not good at it, I'm not going to engage in it.
Oh yeah, I hear you. I played PvP server for a while. I thought it was interesting, and it was really, really engaging. It's one of those things where maybe in the moment, a lot of the times you're really frustrated, in areas that are neutral and you're just dying over and over again. You're I have to log off.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's such a good story mechanic, you know, people that play PvP servers have the best stories of their leveling experiences. This one time this rogue was camping me and I said something in chat and there was 4 or 5 level max level toons that just come in, drop out of the sky and just blast him over and over again and just sit on his body and make him log out. It was so great. You know, they have those crazy stories.
I know. I always wish I had those too.
I For me, it was great because I felt like I jumped in on a new PvP server right around a couple months after that PvP server launched into a new expansion. So tons of people were coming over playing alts because they know how fun PvP servers are when you first get them. So I was playing a warlock, a blood elf warlock in this realm. And there was a rogue that was like four levels above me. And we were just going at it in Shimmering Flats. And it was so much fun. He ended up like making a level one tune, memorizing my gamer tag. And then we just chatted for like half an hour. It was really, really cool. It was one of those weird experiences that was like, that's so neat. This guy like, has a second account and, just so he can chat with people on the PvP servers he plays on. That's so cool. And like, I was like very blown away at how cool the community was on that PvP server.
That WoW was kind of like that first game that like really introduced me to the thought of building like actual like friendships in a game, if that makes any sense.
Like, same here, actually. Yeah,
there was just something about, you know, getting nine other people that like you don't really know at first into a raid or something together, and then just like over time you like get to know about each other. You don't even call each other by your like game names, like, you know, first name basis. And
Yeah,
phone numbers exchange. Exactly. It was a bizarre, like, kind of, it was a weird experience. And like, I don't know, I always thought that that was like the best part about World of Warcraft. I still talk to some of the people I used to play with, even though I don't play the game anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't play it at all, but I used to, fun fact. Okay. So, you know, Patrick Beja from the Instance podcast.
Yeah.
So my Twitter handle came from an inspiration from him in 2009 because I had been listening to The Instance from 2007 to about 2010 on and off. And that was the first podcast and basically the only podcast I ever listened to. I thought it was so cool. And I was just blown away. I was like, that's so cool. And then like, get this, like a couple weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, Overwatchers podcast with Garrett Weinzerl and Cham MV and Patrick Beja had something that triggered them to say something about how great Omnic Lab was.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, what? They're like shouting out our show. I was like, this is full circle. And then like, not only that, but Patrick didn't know our show existed, jumps on Twitter, follows everybody, listens to like five shows full tilt, like binging. And then messages me in DMs. He's like, no way. Did you get your tag from me? Did you do this? Did you do this? He's like, how did you listen to The Instance? And like, we just went at it and talked about our experiences. It was so cool. I was like, I got on a first name basis and like just chit chatting with Patrick Beja as a peer, you know, within the matter of a couple episodes. It was like, what? This is so cool.
That's
like, I listened to this dude when I was in high school. I hope you feel old, Patrick.
That would be like a complete surreal experience, honestly. Like, that's super.
It was very surreal.
That's super cool. Like, that'd be like if, like, somehow Jeff Gerstmann from Giant Bomb, you know, reached out and we started talking. Because that's, like, the dude I've been listening to for a long time. So, since the old GameSpot days back in, what, 2007, 2006 or something like that? Oh, man.
Yeah, sounds about right.
No, that's cool. I've been listening to The Instance. I'm probably about the same time you started too. I mean, that was where to start, you know. That was the first real podcast I heard of for World of Warcraft anyway.
Yeah, if you look at Realm Maintenance, which is shout out to Ro, he was basically puts out a podcast about Blizzard podcasts. There are so many WoW podcast now that it will blow your socks off. There are WoW podcasts now. There are like multiple WoW podcasts now.
There's I know that there's a ton. I mean, I used to try to listen to a bulk of them because I used to listen to Realm Maintenance too when he started his show. And I'm like, I can't keep up.
Right. And they have so many shows that are not just WoW related. There's like a few that are PvP only. There's even a large chunk of them that are just literal lore, like 100% lore WoW shows. And like that's some serious dedication.
There's
the amount of content you have to prepare for a week. I know how much it takes just talking about strategy and like coming up with ideas. Dang, that's got to be a lot of effort to do lore.
There's even a podcast that is about making gold in the auction house in World of Warcraft. I kid you not.
Yeah. It's about gold maximization, right?
Yep. It's something like that. I follow them on Twitter. I need to just figure out, you know, what they're called, because I don't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, totally. Like, it's amazing the glut of World of Warcraft podcasts that all have, you know, all seemingly have an audience, right?
I'm just blown away that the game has that much of a following, that many podcasts. And furthermore, like, I think of all of the Blizzard games besides maybe StarCraft, I feel like they have the least amount of weekly/monthly support for updates and things that are happening and gears and cogs that are moving, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There's like normally like a big update. I don't know if it's still the same, but it used to be like a big update every, like, you know, 6 months with a couple hot fixes here and there. In StarCraft, it's even less than that. Whereas Overwatch is like every 2 weeks, it feels like.
And there's some times where it's just like literally every 4 days.
Especially now with these Lucio changes about to come in.
They can't figure out what they're doing on the PTR. It's kind of infuriating.
It's just like, man, I try to keep up, and then now I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to wait until like I start hearing about a new patch about the drop, and then I'll start looking, because it changes literally every like other day, it feels.
It's so hard from a content creation perspective too, because you're just like, is this like going to go through, and is this worth talking about if it's kind of a test, you know, and is it worth a discussion topic, or should we just move on? You know, like, those are like big questions for a lot of the PTR people, because there are some people that just like infinitely theory craft like overnight, like they'll lose sleep over theory crafting. And then you have like other people that are just like, oh my word, you guys, just talk about what's actually happening in the game and we can deal with this when it actually comes out, you know? So it's really tough, because that happens with any show, not just, you know, Overwatch, but like anything that has some sort of test server with things that potentially could not go through, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So at least Hearthstone doesn't have, does Hearthstone have a PTR that opens up or no?
Unfortunately, for some people that question is no, but fortunately for people like me on the content creation side, they don't at all. Like, if they're making an announcement about cards changing rotations, or even cards moving into what they call the Hall of Fame, which was just announced for this next standard year, what they're like introducing this new thing where they put classic or evergreen cards into the Hall of Fame, that ain't changing.
Yeah.
And if it does change, it's like a big deal. Like, they're like, hey, this is happening. We're going to give you all of your dust back. They're very, very sensitive to what's happening in the new player experience and budget player experience realm. They're very, very sensitive to that sort of thing. So, because there's just so much uproar. Like, I feel like every gaming community has its toxic side, and some toxic communities are larger than others. Like League of Legends, for example, and there's a good chunk of Overwatch people that are pretty toxic as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, Hearthstone, just people that are on Reddit and talk and like talking about Hearthstone on a competitive level are just like bursting at the seams with how much negativity they pack in that community. It's just unreal to me. So it's kind of tilting, you know. It's just like these people are so entitled for freebies. It's just like, if we don't get at least X amount of free packs, I'm quitting the game. And like, they're like, this game is horrible, this game is awful. And it's like, why do you guys continually come to this community and talk and comment and share your opinion if you hate the game that much?
And they're still playing. That's the best part. They're still playing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, if it's that bad, then just go play Gwent, or go play TES Legends, or go play the new Yu-Gi-Oh game that's kind of like for mobile only. You got all kinds of stuff to go play.
Exactly.
Even just real TCGs. People will understand. If you want to go play a TCG and you pick up Magic, you pick up even current Yu-Gi-Oh, current Pokemon, you're going to be paying double, if not triple or quadruple, the amount of money just to enter, let alone play the game.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I enjoyed Hearthstone. I played it from beta on I probably stopped about a year and a half ago, and incidentally, as soon as I stopped, my wife decided to start playing. So now she's all on the Hearthstone train. So I still keep trying to keep up to date on like what's happening for her, because you know she doesn't engage with that side of it.
So sure.
You know, I'll text her. I'll be like, "Hey, make sure." Like just recently, yesterday, I texted her as of when we're recording. I'm like, "Hey, you're logging in every day, right? Like they're giving out free shit like every day."
Yeah. There's a golden card on the 5th that they're getting too, and it looks cool.
It does look cool. I'm just like, okay, so I need to make sure she logs in, even though I'm not playing and I won't, like, I don't really care.
Right.
But I have to keep her up to date, because if she misses out on something, she will get kind of pissed off about it, which is totally understandable, especially when it's like a free golden legendary and you're just like, why didn't you tell me that that was there? I'm like, so I just try to keep up to date and make sure that she knows what's going on.
Cool stuff you get for the cards that are rotating out, you know, dusting, all that stuff. Very, exactly. Very good information to have.
Yeah, I'll text her, or, you know, I'll link her like an article or something on Reddit and be like, hey, these cards are moving into, you know, wild format.
Such She's
like,
such, yeah.
Oh no, I used that card. Like when Dr. Boom left, she was actually pretty pissed off about that one.
When Dr. Still got Boom my golden one.
When Dr. Boom went into wild, that was her card. She was like, she crafted that one. She saved up her dust and she dusted a bunch of cards and crafted Dr. Boom. She was super happy about it. And then I think it was like 2 weeks later, it went into wild. And she couldn't use it in her standard decks anymore.
Oh man.
Oh, that was fun.
That's the card that honestly gives a lot of players PTSD. Like that is the most busted card they've printed. Arguably alongside of two other cards, which is Lotheb and Sludge Belcher. Those are like the three most busted cards they've ever printed, and they were back-to-back sets.
Yeah, they were. Actually, I think Lotheb and Sludge Belcher came out in the same adventure, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. That adventure was the most busted thing we've ever seen in Hearthstone, and they've toned everything way back since the first two expansions. It was very, very different.
Fun, though. It was so much fun.
It was. I'm not going to lie. Naxxramas is still the coolest. No. Everything dying and coming back, and Black Knight, and I miss Black Knight days. I'm hoping Black Knight comes back in the meta, but there's too many cheap taunts. It's like you don't have a good enough big taunt that you can get a big swing turn with Black Knight.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Talking about it now makes me want to go back and play, and I think I go through these like wants of playing like phases. Probably about every 3 months. I'm like, oh, I should go back and play.
Every time they have an expansion, right?
Exactly. Yeah, more or less. It happens. It happened when Mean Streets of Gadgetzan came out, and I was like, oh, I should go back and play. And so like, I played for about a week.
So much fun, though.
I played for a week, and then I'm like, if I get tilted pretty easily if I don't feel like I'm winning all the time. And Hearthstone is one of those games that, like, it tilts me harder than like losing in Overwatch.
It can be that way. You just got to... Like, honestly, this is something that I say on my show a lot, but play on your PC or play with an app that lets you monitor your win rate and force yourself to play 5-10 games and look at your win rate. You know, like if you're losing more than you're winning, then time to get off. But people that say, like, play 10 games a day is really, honestly, if you play 10 games a day for a whole month, you can guarantee that you're going to probably hit rank 5 as long as you're playing the same 1-2 decks and learning. And the decks are not like garbage tier or homebrew stuff that you can't guarantee they're going to win games with.
Yeah.
But
so how do you
it's
go
still
about,
pretty good.
So you've been playing CCGs for a while. Just, you know, quick aside because time's running lower, right?
Sure.
How do you go about theory crafting decks? Because this is something I've always tried and my wife actually tries, but like, I don't know where to like start.
Well, in CCGs in general, I'm not the biggest pro. I always like to pick people's brains, and that's where I start learning. But from what I've learned for playing Hearthstone in particular, as well as being able to pick up Magic, is there's a couple things you need to know about deck building. You always are going to need a good... like there's a certain percentage or a certain card count you want to hit that is what they call the curve. So there are obviously card... distributions in different decks and different card games that the curve will always affect. But this is more or less like how soon in the game, like early, mid, late game, how soon you can get cards at certain points in the game. And the curve and what it looks like is that there are higher card counts in lower middle, or in higher areas of the game. Usually, you don't have a whole lot of high-cost minions because, or high-cost cards, because if they cost a lot, then it takes a while to get there. So if you have more of those, more of your games are going to, like, 100% of your games are going to be in the early game. And even less than that will then go to the mid game, and even less will go to the late game, unless your deck is geared to getting it to the late game, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you always are going to need cards that help you get to the curve to support that. And the curve is basically like a rise and fall in the card distribution count of each area. So that's something that's very important. If you're playing mid range, you're playing end game, you kind of want the card to kind of the curve to kind of sway right or further towards having more high cost cards. But you also need a fair amount of low-cost cards in order to compensate to get you to that point. Okay. And the other thing that you need to pay attention to beyond the curve is that, they're always, every single deck, every one of them needs something that draws cards, with very few exceptions. And the general rule of thumb in Hearthstone is you need between 4 and 7 cards, or 4 and 6 cards, sorry, that say something about drawing. And there are exceptions with Warlock in particular, because Warlock has cards that they can draw with their hero powers. You don't necessarily have to have a card. That's why decks like Zoo exist, where it's literally like 28 minions and 2 Power Overwhelmings, like, you know, those kind of decks.
Yeah.
But you also have cards that are like combo decks, where you want to play a card that says for every X, draw a card. Or cards that say, make a copy of and put in your hand, or something like that. Those count in that sense. Okay. So that's kind of the other thing that I've learned, over the course of time playing Hearthstone. And then the last thing is every deck needs a little bit of burn, and burn is simply just something that can do damage, and it's just damage. It's just damage. Like, that's all it is. And understanding how much reach you have beyond the board and how much you can just do from hand at any given time. You need a little bit of burn in about every deck.
Okay.
So 1-2 cards, kind of minimum, and then maybe half the deck for like aggressive decks are burn. Like, you look at aggro shaman, for example, they have 2 lightning bolts, they have 2 lava bursts, and they have 2 jade lightning. So that's 2, 4, 6 cards of burn. And then they have, if you kind of can count the flame tongue totems that you have, that's 2 more cards that will count towards burn and count for trading and high value threat cards that they have to deal with. If that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
The last thing I'll say before you jump in, Brennan, sorry, is that if you're playing card games in general, you have to realize that any rule of thumb or any rule that people tell you straight up is meant to be broken. And that's why people craft decks and create new things. So that's how decks like Zoo or Miracle Rogue exist, is because people think outside of the box.
Yeah. Now, Miracle Rogue, that's the bane of my wife's existence, honestly.
The one turn, do everything that your opponent can't do.
Yeah, know? Or the, what's it called? The ones where they make you just burn all your cards.
Mill?
Yeah, mill decks. That's the, she like legit like, like throws her
mill and freeze, right?
Yeah,
that's the 2.
Yeah, she's just like, I can't do this. These they're just making me draw my cards. I'm dying of fatigue. I'm like, I feel so bad for you because you're still fighting that.
Right.
You're right. And then I go play Overwatch and I'm getting picked out of the air by McCree. I'm like, ah.
And your team's just like tilting into Sombra.
Yeah, most of the time I have solo queue, so you know it, I have ups and downs. Actually, like,
can't
I said,
do it.
I've been
brave man.
I've been going on a tear recently. I find that in Overwatch, it's best to play versatile heroes that can do multiple things, right? Okay. So like Zenyatta or Soldier are actually my go-tos.
Roadhog. Yeah.
Now most of the time I end up playing Lucio because everybody just jumps on DPS or a tank and then they're left with no healers, so then I just go loose. But you know, you gotta play it by ear. And like you guys mentioned on your show, you just gotta kind of have to be flexible with your team. You can't fit them into your box because there's more of them than you by yourself. So I kind of just kind of, after a while, you start realizing how people are gonna play, and you just like, all right, I'll go with it. I'll roll with it.
Kind of have to assume there's 5 other players in your team that want a comfort pick just as bad as you do, and other people that don't necessarily want a comfort pick, but they just want to play what they want to play, and so they're going to insta-lock Hanzo, even though they have 400 hours on Reinhardt. You know, it's
like, yeah, sometimes exactly.
So,
but no, like I said, I've been going on a tear recently, just following that little bit of advice. So I've literally been steadily climbing since I placed in at 22. I made plat last season, but I placed in like 22, Rats. 21. I'm nice. Almost pushing plat again, and I haven't really even been playing that much. So I think I'm at like 24.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's amazing. Nice.
And I
yeah, that is not a good, that is not an easy tier to climb. I feel like gold is one of the hardest tiers. Gold and platinum are probably the two hardest tiers in my estimation to kind of move out of. Some people say diamond's pretty tough, but I feel like there's a big range of skill within diamond, and that might be it, but there's probably just as big of a range of skill within gold. It's just much lower, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly,
because it's got the biggest, most populated distribution of players that's in the game right now, is that and plat, those two.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, keep climbing, keep fighting the ranks, keep moving on up. I think I've played 10 games. I think I've lost one and drew one in solo wow. queue. So I think
it's better I'm than actually, my last 10 games.
I think hey, some days are just absolutely terrible. After three losses, I'm out. I can't keep going. I made that rule.
Oh, that's pretty good. I think that's probably pretty close to mine. Is usually if I lose three, I don't play more than that after yeah. three losses. It's kind of the game, but
exactly. Well, Rob, you've been absolutely fantastic, and honestly, this has been something I've been very excited about for about the last week. So thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, dude, I'm all up for this stuff. This is great. I'm all about engaging community, regardless of who it is and what you do. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you much success, and especially in your gaming endeavors, enjoy it and just keep playing.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead. Where can people find you at?
If you can find me, just on Twitter, it's at NotRob. It's probably the best way to find me anywhere. I'm on Discord, Instagram, all that stuff. Just find the tag NotRob or NotRobMay is usually what I'm going by. If you like podcasts, you like Hearthstone, Velen's Chosen. If you like Omnic Lab, that's the podcast about Overwatch that I do. So those are some cool places you can find me.
Awesome. You can always email me. What was that?
So what about you? Where can people find you, man?
You can find me on Twitter at NadNerb. That's NadNerb. You can find me streaming, actually, and Anders called me a hipster for this, but you can find me streaming on Beam at beam.pro at NadNerb64.
Ooh, Casey Neistat, Brosif. Nice.
Yeah. As always, you can email the show, especially if you want to be a guest on the show, at whyweplayshow@gmail.com. Same thing on Twitter at whyweplayshow. And that's about it. Rob, once again, you've been fantastic. I can't thank you enough.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
And for sure. And thank you for the CCG help. I'm going to talk to my wife after this and give her the hot tips, the hot scoops.
Yeah. I do a lot of fun voiceover stuff on Valence Chosen, so just shoot her over to us and she'll be entertained and enjoy talking about dinos, probably. I imagine.
Will do. That's going to do it for this episode of Why We Play. Until next time, keep playing games and let's keep talking.